part of the revolution today.
Welcome to America Tonight, from coast to coast and all the nooks and crannies in between. Here we sit, 14 months from now, will we have somebody else getting ready to occupy the White House, or will the current occupants stay on for another 4 years? The Tea Partiers would like to see a change of scenery, so would many of the rest of us, because we're frustrated with the ineffectiveness of the current administration. And more than even 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, what's happening in Washington in general? Just take all of it, Foggy Bottom, and let's reverse the situation. So yet another Republican debate. This time it's sponsored by the Tea Party, several groups of the Tea Party from around the United States, on CNN. And eight of the candidates, of course, all of them, were there, from Ron Paul to Newt Gingrich to Rick Perry, the true front runner right now anyway in the polls, Mitt Romney, Michelle Bachmann, Herman Cain was there as well, and John Huntsman, the former ambassador to China in the Obama administration, and of course the former governor of Utah. John Huntsman doesn't necessarily get a lot of press. Most of it is going to Perry or Romney, or even Bachmann, and occasionally some of the others. Not so much Huntsman's way. But in listening to everything that was said, the back and forth usually set up between Romney and Perry the most, he still had his say, and he threw in his two cents on what everybody is concerned about and what this next election is absolutely about. It's the economy, stupid. Here's Huntsman.
We all know that we've got entitlement problems. We've got Medicare. We've got Social Security. The fixes are there. I mean, the Ryan plan is there, for heaven's sake. We've got the answers. We don't have leadership. That's the problem.
All right, we don't have leadership. We got answers. So what is the answer? Do you think this president stays on, or do you think that there's too much frustration out there? And we know the unemployment numbers are much higher than the official number of 9.1. There's underemployment. It's a lot of disillusionment. You can feel it from sea to shining sea. Let's get America working again. Daniel in Minnesota, you get the first crack. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Good. Thanks for the call, buddy. What's on your mind?
I just want to say I was listening to you, and this administration is proving very ineffective. But like you said, it's not exactly 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I think the whole system right now is not operating the way it was designed to operate, because they're between narcissism and foolish pride and all sorts of other things. They can't find each other in the aisle that they have to reach across. And it's going to be, I think it would instigate a huge turnover and policy change when the next election comes up. Because even when the Senate had the election, they were all the first year people were like, yeah, we're going to come in there and we're going to kick some butt, blah, blah. And I'm still waiting. So I hope that, we can change it over and start anew.
I agree. You know, that's why I always say, Daniel, third party, give me something fresh, give me something new, give me the smartest, the brightest. I don't care if they have good hair. I don't care if they wear great clothes. I don't care. I'm not looking for snappy answers. I'm looking for answers. I'm looking for something that works here. And it's definitely broken.
It is. And I think that the country, well, I shouldn't say that. I think my opinions are weakened because of the lack of knowledge in Washington itself, but also the integrity issues that we think of when we look at someone in higher office. And it's not only the physical or the financial side; it's the behaviors and attitudes, and it makes it nervous because you're not sure if they're capable of doing what they really said they do.
Yeah, I agree. Some good comments. Thank you, Daniel.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not really sure. You're really not sure what you're getting. That's true. You know, it's like that, remember that movie where Forrest Gump, the whole thing about a life is like a box of chocolates? How many times did you hear that played over and over again, that little clip? You know, they always isolate when there's a popular movie. Something gets isolated from the movie. So for a while, that kept being played over and over again. Well, it's really true. You have no idea what you're getting in Washington. You don't know. When you lift open the box, you know, you could be surprised or you could be horrified. And more often than not, unfortunately, we're horrified. And because of some of the systems that are set in place, too big a government, you got to say it. We are overregulated. We're overmodulated with all the bickering back and forth and overregulated. It has to stop. I mean, really, that's part of the big problem here. It's a mountain of red tape, and it's in so many departments, there's too much overlap. I think if there was an audit of some of these spots in the government, they would find, oh, we don't need this, we don't need that. Why do we have this? Why does it take so long? It's ineffective. The last thing any of us want to deal with is too much government, and there's a reason for it, because, you know, if you've been on the sideline and your life is rosy and great and perfect and you haven't had to deal with any of the issues that we're talking about, you haven't gone through unemployment, you haven't gone through layoffs, all that stuff which would be related to the unemployment deal, and you haven't had to deal with the federal government too much, you know, it's just pretty open and shut when you do your taxes, then you don't know what we mean. But you probably do, at least on a local level, when you get frustrated with something that you don't understand why that happened, you got blindsided by some crazy regulation or whatever, and then the enforcement of it, and then however that goes down. You know, that this is what it is. There's too much of that. So, does somebody offer a fresh approach that we can all live with, that we can all get behind? That is what we're looking for. Now, that's why the Tea Party has sustained itself and grown. How does the Tea Party start if people aren't upset, if people aren't furious with what they're seeing? You can thank what happened in 2008 for what we're seeing now. Start back there. Start with the banks, bailing out the banks. I mean, people are tired of it. That's why Ron Paul gets a lot of support in his libertarian views, because, hey, that resonates. It resonates what he's saying with our monetary system, with the nonsense and the spending. Spending, spending, spending until it's just so out of control. We have this crazy deficit that we can't even wrap our arms around. And we can't imagine that we'll ever be able to get back in the black. So that's why Michelle Bachmann got a nice bump. Ron Paul got a nice bump. And they're trying to leverage whatever they can as this continues to move along, this process, because there's many more debates that are coming up. But Rick Perry has snagged the biggest prize so far of all, and he definitely has Tea Party support. But does he have enough support to take him all the way through this process? I don't know. Not sure yet. We're kicking the can down the road. Stay with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Ready to save? Then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. The best pharmaceutical grade available at all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with you Hindi and Super Fem Plex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps, summer sale priced at only $12. Colon Enhancer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature one person at a time.
Yes, indeed. Tampa was the site for the Tea Party debate. It's the usual suspects on the stage. You know who I'm talking about. From John Huntsman and Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich. And the two heavy hitters, of course, Rick Perry and also Mitt Romney. And throw in a big full house. And yes, in fact, you have a debate. But I guess as you go through this, and now we've seen a couple of these, you ask yourself, I always say, what's the scorecard? Who won? Who seemed to slide a little bit? And who got a few zingers in? Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News had the pleasure of covering this debate. He's in Florida. Hey, Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm great. It's good to be with you.
You know, so overall, what was the? It seemed like there was lots of applause. It was it seemed pretty emotional to me. It had a different flavor, I guess. I'm thinking from afar, watching this and rewatching it twice. Did it seem like that to you? Was a little bit different than the mood when we started out in New Hampshire?
Well, yeah, I think it was a little different. And really, the landscape of the GOP field has changed since New Hampshire. You know, in the last 2 months, you've seen the addition of Rick Perry, the Texas governor, the subtraction of Tim Pawlenty, who was, you know, when this whole thing started, one of the front runners, and he's gone. So now really what you have at this point is sort of a two-man race, I would say, between Rick Perry, the Texas governor, and Mitt Romney, the former Massachusetts governor who ran in 2008. And I think right now Rick Perry has the edge, not only according to most of the national polling that's going on, and in fact, the most recent poll that I read, a CNN poll conducted yesterday, put Perry over Romney by a dozen points. So Perry is leading the field by an astronomical count in the polls. But I thought he did a good job tonight in the debate. And I think that you can tell that he's the front runner when you go back and you watch the debate and you realize that everybody is trying to gang up on him and bring him down a peg. And I thought tonight it worked on some cases. It didn't really work on other cases. I thought, you know, Michelle Bachmann went really hard after Rick Perry on the law that he signed via executive order in 2007 in Texas requiring young girls to get the HPV vaccine. Of course, you know, for most conservatives, it's, government has to be hands-off. The government cannot, meddle in the affairs of ordinary citizens, especially when it comes to health care. And so, for conservative candidates, that's something they really want to hit Perry over. But I also thought that Mitt Romney went after Perry on jobs. Mitt Romney obviously has his 60-point plan to create jobs, and Rick Perry hasn't really, Perry's talked a lot about his efforts as governor in Texas to create jobs and grow that economy. But Romney said today that basically it wasn't because of anything Perry did. It was the fact that Texas is just well-suited as a state to growing jobs. And Romney had a great line. He said, when you're given four aces, that doesn't make you a good poker player. And Perry shot back, you know what, I think you should stop talking about poker. So they had a little back and forth. But in the end, I think the debate was really showcasing Rick Perry. And I thought that he came through it pretty well. I think he's still the front runner.
All right, so you think he won, you think he's the front runner. The Tea Party obviously likes him. You talked about this. He answered, watching that, the HP vaccination question pretty well, because Michelle Bachmann, you're right, did go after him on that. And he admitted, he just said, yeah, it was a mistake. Did you think that was pretty clever of him to just do that and not try to sidestep it?
Well, I actually think what Perry did was he said, you know what, I wouldn't have, if I could do it over, I wouldn't have done it the way I did it. Meaning he wouldn't have done it, he wouldn't have issued it through executive order. He would have done it through the legislative process. He would have, gone to the Texas legislature and said, hey, guys, this is what I want to do. That's what Rick Perry is saying. So he's not flatly rejecting what he did. And, in fact, he was asked about it multiple times, and he said, for him, it's a matter of life. The HPV disease is known to cause cervical cancer. It was something for him that he said he wanted to help girls preserve their lives. Afterwards, after the debate, I went into the spin room and talked to Rick Santorum, who's one of the candidates. And Santorum is absolutely livid at Rick Perry over this. Santorum, his objection is that he thinks it encourages young girls to start being sexually active. And, of course, that's something that the Perry campaign denies as being a reason why he signed that into law. That's going to be something that the candidates are going to go after. But at the end of the day, Kate, I think this thing is all going to be about the economy and jobs. And I think that HPV issue is really going to fly under the radar as we move on. We're 14 months out, and as we get closer to things and as the primary season starts, I think that's going to disappear in terms of an issue that can bring Perry down.
Yeah. Ron Paul, he was also on the stage. How do you think Paul did?
Well, it was funny because I was texting a buddy of mine who he's a political consultant himself. And at the beginning of the debate, it seemed like Ron Paul was just out of gas. And I was actually watching this debate thinking to myself, is this the last of Ron Paul? But I thought that Paul came back in the second half of the debate with some good responses, particularly, Paul. He's got a lot of supporters, and they travel well. And, in fact, I ran into a couple of them here on the fairgrounds in Tampa. And Paul is on his game when he's being provocative. And foreign policy is really an opportunity for Ron Paul to showcase what he's all about. He was asked about Afghanistan, and he said, the bottom line is we have to pull our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, bring them home. That got a lot of applause from his supporters. He was also asked about the budget. How do you balance the budget? And he said, first and foremost, you take all the troops out of foreign nations like Iraq and Afghanistan, and now, of course, we have four troops in Libya. Who knows where that's going to go?
Right.
And that scored him a lot of points, too. But I think that Ron Paul, at this point, is no better than number three, and I just don't see him pulling off, an upset.
Okay, you like Perry in this. You talked about how Perry defended himself and, that a lot of the other candidates tried to take him down. And one of the things that Mitt Romney goes after him about constantly is his whole take on Social Security and the Ponzi scheme comment he made before. Do you think he deflected that pretty well?
Yeah. Excuse me, Kate. Yeah, I think he did a decent job. I think, obviously that was something 5 days ago in California that Mitt Romney was really able to capitalize on, going after Rick Perry for those comments. Since then, Perry and his campaign have had time to sort of spin that and smooth it over. And what Rick Perry's been able to do is say, listen, I don't want to demolish Social Security or end it. I want to preserve it for future generations. That's an argument that he needs to keep on making over and over and over again, especially here in Florida, where you have almost 20% of the population in the state 65 years or over. In fact, I was visiting with my aunt the other day, who I love and adore, and I was talking to her about the candidates, and she said, you know what, I like this Rick Perry guy, but he wants to end Social Security. So I think the Perry campaign really has to get that message out that they don't want to abolish Social Security. They want to reform it. Meanwhile, Mitt Romney is going to keep attacking him on that issue. You know, I think in terms of the Ponzi scheme thing, it's interesting. I've gone back and done some research. A lot of folks have called Social Security a Ponzi scheme, Milton Friedman being one of them, Paul Krugman, who's a liberal op-ed writer for the New York Times. It's just the fact that Perry's running for president. You know, it's something that the candidates can use against them. Again, it's an example of how I think that he has to be considered the frontrunner because everybody's trying to gang up on him. That makes him look like the frontrunner. It almost makes him look presidential. I think the fact that he's not, you know, the sharpest or the most polished debater is sort of overlooked in these situations because he's just, you know, he's got such a good record on the economy.
Yeah. I said usual suspects, and I wonder if anyone will fall out from this. You mentioned Rick Santorum. How long does he hang around? What about Herman Cain? One of the things that they were asked sort of on the lighter side is what would you bring to the White House? And I guess it could be lighter or more serious. But Herman Cain said I'd bring a sense of humor to the White House because America's too uptight, which actually was kind of a funny moment. Do you think Herman Cain or Newt Gingrich or Rick Santorum or any of these guys start to fall by the wayside?
Well, first of all, I love Herman Cain. I'm going to take my reporter cap off here for a second and just level with you. I mean, I think the guy, I just think he brings a lot to the table. And he's a really interesting guy. I mean, he's pretty much the only guy that isn't, a career politician. He has a business background. He did serve a stint as the Federal Reserve Bank chairman in Kansas City. But I think that Herman Cain has a lot of ideas. You have to listen to Herman Cain because he's one of the only candidates when he gets on the stage, he actually puts forth specific solutions, specific plans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something to be commended because a lot of these folks, you know, they talk in generalities, they speak very vaguely, and, you know, they try to go high on the rhetoric. But at the end of the day, I think we're at a point, at least most of the voters I've talked to in Florida and Iowa and New Hampshire, they want specific solutions. They want to know exactly how we're going to get unemployment down. They want to know exactly how we're going to restore GDP growth and pay down the debt. So Herman Cain, you know, love him or hate him, and, you know, again, he could be out of the race, in a couple months or so, but he's at least, you got to give him props for being high on specifics. I think, obviously Rick Santorum, he's done a lot of campaigning. He's put a lot of time and energy into this race, so it would be a shame for his campaign for him to drop out, but he's not getting a lot of time in these debates, and he's just not being looked at as a viable candidate. And really, I think outside of, you know, being a strong social conservative, I don't know that Rick Santorum has much to offer, to put himself ahead of, say, a Perry or a Romney. I think John Huntsman's another guy who came into this race with a lot of fanfare because he was looked at as sort of being the moderate centrist alternative, but he hasn't really been able to gain a lot of traction, and he wasn't able to do much tonight either. I don't know. I think Huntsman's sort of going off the rails on message. So, yeah, I mean, those are a couple guys who I think could drop out. And then, like I said earlier, Ron Paul, I don't know how much he has left. He's got this groundswell of support, but, you know, it's you saw what happened to him last time around, and the same thing could happen to him in this cycle.
Yeah, I agree. We don't know what's going to happen with Ron Paul. A lot of people listening to America Tonight actually really like what Ron Paul has had to say. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News, thanks so much. Good stuff from you, buddy. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Did you know nuclear radiation is still spewing out of the melted down reactors in Fukushima, Japan, and making its way across the entire U.S. continent, contaminating the air, water, and food? Dangerously high levels of radiation are a reality here. As a result, radiation poisoning is a distinct possibility for anyone living in the U.S. unless you do something to protect yourself. How? With liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Without a doubt, liquid zeolite is by far the best product to remove radiation from your body. It safely removes toxins and heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. Liquid zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite by calling 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. Or go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Ops Gear is your source for head-to-toe tactical gear. Save 15% on your order right now. This week only, radio listeners get their choice of Ops Gear t-shirts for just $11.99. We've got shirts for military, law enforcement, zombie hunters, veterans, infidels, shooters, and more. Check them out at OpsGear.com. Use coupon code GCN at checkout. That's GCN and save big on our exclusive t-shirts. Plus, we give away great gear each week. Visit us at OpsGear.com. That's OPSGEAR.com or call 888-239-1384.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
You can't argue with success. And many people have found great success in fighting back colds and flu viruses with Alli-C, the world's best garlic extract. So now, it's time to get even more success with the other great quality natural products from Affinity Health Products. Like C-Energy Liquid Vitamins, Lose and Snooze, and the One Day Diet. Or Human Growth Hormone Support, Menopause Specialist for Women, and Joint Specialist. See these and many other quality Affinity Health products for men and women online at AffinityHealthProducts.com. That's A-F-F-I-N-I-T-Y HealthProducts.com. Or call in your orders at 877-888-7126. That's 1-877-888-7126. Trust your health to the makers of Alli-C, the world's best garlic extract. Affinity Health Products, the finest and most innovative natural health products available.
Welcome back to America Tonight. How often do I say on this show, follow the money, follow the money? And we've proven the point of where the money goes so often it leads us to the bad guy. Whoever it is we're looking for, whatever the circumstances, I think all of you know by now what I'm talking about. And, of course, throughout this hour we'll talk about some of those examples, as we always do. Jonathan Schanzer joins us now. He is the Vice President for Research at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. And also, this is so interesting, he's a former terrorism finance analyst. Can you imagine that gig at the United States Department of Treasury? Jonathan, thanks so much for hopping on ATN.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. If we, you know, we just went through the 10-year anniversary, and I was thinking about this. I was in New York at the time. I worked at an all sports radio station, WFAN, in New York, but we just did away with sports for a while and talked about all aspects of what was unfolding before us. And that was one of the things that was one of the first things I did, is I started to ask about the money. And then there was lots of reports on that. There was some good reporting actually being done talking about assets and freezing assets. So take us back for a second. It was just a couple weeks after a 9/11 that the president had an executive order, am I right, that had, of course, the list of terrorist entities, basically, that were on the hit list. And that's when we started to target the money, correct?
That's correct. I mean, actually, to be more precise, there was already an organization, a small organization within the Treasury Department within the Office of Foreign Assets Control that had already started tracking terrorist funds beginning in the late 1990s. But after the attacks of 2001, the president issued Executive Order 13224, and it listed, I think, 23 different terrorist organizations that we had already had our eyes on. And what it did is it immediately made it illegal to have any financial transactions with them, and that their assets were to be frozen here in the United States. And we continue to add to that annex, as we called it, that 13224 executive order, with additional terrorist organizations as well as individuals, and then later on charities and companies and other fronts that were involved in the financing of terror. The and quite frankly, it was one of the more successful operations of the U.S. government in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. When you look back at the 9/11 report, those activities were one of the few things that the U.S. government did that earned high marks from that commission.
Yeah, absolutely. And you weren't surprised by the results that you found, right? Because it was like breadcrumbs to grandmother's house or right to the hornet's nest.
Well, that's right. And unfortunately, for us, the terrorists that were operating here in the United States did so with the knowledge that we just weren't doing anything about it, and they operated really in the light of day. And so in the early goings, we were able to shut down a number of charities and a number of high-profile cases where we were able to capture a good deal of money. And also, I mean, the upshot of terror finance activities is it also helps you draw a map. So if you can see where the finances are going, where the money is being siphoned off, you can identify new nodes, and you can begin to focus in on those as well. And so we charted it out, and we were able to really crack down on a number of terrorist networks, from Al-Qaeda to Hamas to other organizations as well. And so for the first couple of years, it was a very successful endeavor, both in terms of identifying terrorists and capturing their cash.
Do you think, Chris, I remember this the story about Holy Land Foundation. Are you familiar with them?
Sure.
Out of Richardson, Texas. And an interesting twist on my own story is before I went to New York, I was doing a show in Dallas, Texas, and the Holy Land Foundation would hit us up because they would have this charity bowling tournament. And they, there was this ruse of what they were doing for people, and they tried to appear very mainstream. They'd sent out lots of press releases and that kind of stuff. You know, I never got involved with them, but I am certain that other of my colleagues probably went out and supported some things that they were doing to raise money occasionally because they would have athletes or someone else involved. Was this ruse? I mean, obviously it worked. Were you surprised when you were able to pull back the layers of that when all that fell apart? Well, you're not surprised, right? Because that was the way they realized that what we were doing in the United States philanthropically was so important that if you could just hook somebody in, there's your hook.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and all these organizations, you know, there was no charity that I ever saw while I worked at the Treasury Department that was 100% dedicated to the financing of terrorism. And so what you'd see is that these organizations would get involved in all sorts of philanthropic activities, and that they would be throwing off, you know, a percentage. Maybe it was 10%, maybe it was 20%, maybe it was 30%. But, you know, the money would be going to these terrorist charities. And this is what made our job that much harder, because at what point do you decide that a terrorist charity is rotten, or that a charity is a terrorist charity, for that matter? You know, if 70% of what they do is good deeds and 30% is going off to terrorism, well, is that enough? And, you know, in the eyes of the U.S. Treasury, it absolutely is. But it made it that much harder because if you think about the optics, specifically among Muslims here in the United States or abroad, where giving charity, or zakat as it's called in Arabic, is one of the five pillars of Islam. And so for us to go around and shut down charities and to capture the funds of people who initially thought they were earmarking it for good deeds really was a black eye for the United States Treasury Department, and really made it look like we were very insensitive to Muslims. But the bottom line is we realize that if you have a charity that brings in $30 million a year and they give off 30%, that's significant enough. In fact, it's probably too much. And so we had to move forward anyway. And the Holy Land Foundation, I think, fit that mold exactly.
Al-Qaeda now, don't they, isn't it pretty much it would have to be cash is king for them? They've got to be smuggling cash somehow, and they've got to have, I would assume, some kind of courier system. not being able to use the banking system any longer in the U.S. Am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing that we really began to realize by, I would say, even as early as 2004, maybe 2005. But, you know, by then, the terrorist organizations had realized that, you know, we were able to capture them. We were able to find them. And so it drove them out of the formal banking sector entirely. So, you know, they couldn't open up accounts and they wouldn't wire funds. And there were all sorts of strictures that we put in place. There were suspicious transactions that we would be following, you know, just large chunks of money. You know, there was at least a predicate within the intelligence community to take a look at anything that was above a certain amount. So it became much, much harder for the terrorist organizations to work through the formal sector. And as a result, they now resort to what we call bulk cash smuggling. And that is really the only way that Al-Qaeda operates today. And that's just basically putting wads of cash into a suitcase and having one guy, a courier, take it across a border or take it across town to get to have cash move from one place to another. And, you know, unfortunately, we've become victims of our own success here in the United States. Because we've been effectively able to push them out of the formal sector, it's now very, very hard to find that money because, you know, cash has no receipts. There's no money trail. So either you have intelligence, you've got a beat on one of these couriers, and you're able to capture them or begin to follow them, which is exactly what we did with Osama bin Laden, by the way. It was a courier that led to that raid in Abbottabad, Pakistan. You know, you need to have good intelligence now, not just the ability to track the funds over the Internet.
Yeah, and do you think, because we talk about this, through my sources, and I think lots of people know this, it's been widely reported with sleeper cells and whatnot, it still has to be a little bit more difficult in the U.S., right? Wouldn't it be harder? Or is it still, hey, you can move cash in the U.S. too. If they're already here, there's ways to do that, like you said, through the bulk delivery, if you will, maybe by bus, maybe in different directions, not necessarily through the airport, because then with opening suitcases, even if you're just jumping from New York to L.A. or wherever, it might be more difficult. But do you think there's a lot of cash circulating in the U.S. that way?
I think so. I think it's very reasonable to believe that. You know, I've been out of Treasury for several years, so I couldn't speak to anything specifically. But, you know, let's just put it this way, that if you wanted to move cash from Detroit to Minneapolis, all you have to do is drive it. And no one's going to stop you. There's no way to, you know, that anybody would have any tip on that, you know, unless you are already on the radar of the intelligence community, of the FBI. And it would really have to be an FBI issue, not so much a CIA one, if it was a domestic, you know, a domestic case here. So it's very easy. And, you know, we know, by the way, that this is not just a terrorist issue, that organized crime engages in this and gangs engage in this. That if they want to make sure that their transactions are off the record, cash is the way to do it.
Yeah. Jonathan, before we let you fly, tell us quickly about the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. If you and I were in an elevator and I said, hey, Jonathan, what do you do? What would you say?
it's a nonpartisan organization that was founded just after 9/11 to study and warn Americans about the threat of jihadism and terrorism. And so we've got a former advisor to Dick Cheney. We've got a former CIA operative. We've got PhDs. We've got Treasury analysts. And all of us work on different areas of the Middle East looking at the threats that these areas pose to the United States.
Yeah, so you find those threats and you pass them on to all the obviously various organizations that your backgrounds are in, correct?
That's right. We'll work with, you know, government organizations. We work very closely with Congress. And, of course, we publish widely. We write books and we'll appear on television and on radio. But the idea is really we're an educational organization designed to just shed light on a problem that 10 years ago very few people knew about. But even 10 years after 9/11, you'd be amazed at what Americans don't know about the threats that are posed to us from the Middle East.
I believe you. Jonathan Shanzer, thanks so much. Will you come on again and enlighten us a little more?
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you.
Why is it so many people suffer from so many illnesses today? Why don't doctors know how to help you? Could it be that our doctors don't know how because there's a nutrition solution and they only know about drugs? Over 68 diseases are known to be connected to a deficiency of glutathione. The missing ingredient to increasing your body's production of glutathione is cysteine. Raising your glutathione production protects you from cancer, heart disease, Parkinson's, macular degeneration, lung disease, digestive diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. Nature's richest source of cysteine is unheated whey. Heating can damage much of the cysteine. One World Whey is the first undamaged whey protein powder on the market. Using One World Whey may support optimal glutathione production unlike any other food or supplement you've ever taken. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Energy, energy, and more energy.
We all need it. Get the energy you need quick through the powers of wild forest extracts. Wild chaga and birch bark are the secrets of the forest used exclusively by Russian athletes. Wild chaga is the world's top source of superoxide dismutase, the critical enzyme that blocks the aging process. Chaga is good for your heart and even helps support healthy arteries. Wild birch extract is the top source of betulin, a natural sterol needed by every cell of the body. And healthy cells mean a healthy body and a more powerful you. No wonder it's known as a king of all herbs. Experience real energy and power like you've never dreamed possible. Take Chago Charge Tea with Wild Birch Bark every day and Chagamax capsules to get the energy you need.
You deserve it.
Order today by calling 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Being careful on the job these days, you really want to make sure that you do just that. What can you do? What can't you do? You know, have you read the company manual? Do you know what the policies are? I hate to say this, but being a person who is in broadcasting, when I first started and I worked for a lot of television stations, you would get these thick manuals, and half the time, I didn't really, you knew the basics, how many days off you had, all that kind of stuff. But there was the fine print that you signed your name to that you didn't always read the entire book. You didn't read the whole thing. Now it's a little bit easier because I think most HR departments put out whatever the company policies are. Usually it's very succinct. Sometimes it's even on a CD or a PDF or what it might be. You still probably have to sign certain things. But it's not the way I think that it used to be. You know, War and Peace. And no one was really reading that. And you got to read. You got to read the fine print. Facebook has thrown a new twist into our world, right? Because what are people putting on Facebook? What kind of pictures of themselves? We've talked about this before here on America Tonight, where this has been used in a court of law in divorce cases where a spouse said they weren't cheating, weren't doing this, and then they were caught red-handed when they pulled up the Facebook of the person and saw them with these various pictures where they were out having drinks and dinner and whatever it might be. What about employees who are doing whatever they're doing on their off time and it shows on Facebook and they might even be trashing their job, for example? Can they be fired for that? Because remember, you've got the National Labor Relations Act, and it says that employees And we're going to get somebody on here that's terrific to talk about this. It says that employees have the right to talk to each other about improving work conditions, because there was a case where someone thought they were going to get fired for what they said about their environment. It was some workers in Buffalo. And, in fact, they ended up getting the boot but then had to be rehired. So what is that all about? Joining us now, Paul Bazell. He's an HR expert. We love having him here on ATN to pick his brain about this kind of stuff. Paul, you know, that I just said that whole employee handbook thing. I mean, I hate to say it. In the past, I've been guilty of it because, you know, I just figured, well, I know the basics. I'm not doing anything that I shouldn't be doing. But I think you have to know now. I mean, you really need to arm yourself with the facts, don't you?
Well, yeah, you're right. But, you know, to your point, Kate, back in the old days, I'm just really glad they didn't give us a test, right?
Exactly.
But today they are the employee manuals that we help employers put together are, as you said, a lot more succinct, and they're word searchable, so employees are generally looking for certain things. They can get to them and find them relatively easily, so it's not like it used to be in any way, shape, or form, but you also pointed out very succinctly that Facebook has and all social media has thrown a whole new wrench into the works when it comes to employment policies.
And would you advise somebody, if you were doing HR for them, would you advise them to spell out that kind of stuff, what they're surfing on the internet? Because, you know, everything's done by computer, almost all the jobs across the board. So would you specify that? Would you spell that out about sites?
Well, if an employer has certain expectations of what employees are supposed to be doing with their time and not supposed to be doing with their time, it's generally prudent to spell those things out in, as an employment policy. Having said that, I almost sound like I'm talking out of the other side of my mouth now.
Right.
The more forward-thinking employers that were concerned about what employees might be posting on their own social media pages were making a policy of saying you can't do those things. You can't badmouth the company. You can't say bad things about the company. You can't say bad things about management. Don't do that. You know, that is not permitted, and you'd be subject to disciplinary action or potentially losing your job over it. Well, the apparent new rule of the day is that, well, not so much.
Yeah, that you can do that because it's a different kind of conversation. Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is all new turf. So, there are a number of cases, on the books where, employers' policies have been upheld and employees did in fact lose their jobs. And that didn't hold water in the Buffalo case.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but there's a different person making the decisions, and they had a different take on it.
Yeah. We live in interesting times, there's no doubt about it. And then, of course, you have the other thing with Twitter. We're focusing on Facebook, but who knows what comes up with Twitter, because there have been people who have also lost jobs, mostly in the entertainment business. And so there's clauses and contracts and stuff, so I could see how they could get them on that. But the things that people tweet, and I guess, I don't know, Paul, maybe people think only a few people are really reading this, but how could they think that when they have so many people following them? I'm stunned by how many people get stung by Twitter as well. And I think it's just that while you say this is, you know, we're trying to grapple with all of this, I think people in general are trying to grapple with social media, and I think they think there's sort of an invisible wall. Do you think that's partially what it is?
Well, we're definitely going through a big change in that area. Just ask anybody that's gone through a divorce recently.
I know. Oh, yeah. That's what I was talking about, how a lot of them, because you can do that, you can pull that up in the courtroom, and then it becomes evidence crazy. Hey, I always wondered this. Is it good when you go to work for a company, should you, especially now because there's some downsizing or sometimes through even just attrition, people start to absorb other job duties? Is it good to always get a job description? Do you tell your clients, hey, you might want to also cover yourself and make sure your employees have a job description?
Absolutely. There's all kinds of reasons, all good reasons, for an employer to have a really accurate job description for each and every position they're hiring for. It starts with being able to qualify your candidates, but it has also to do with pay scale, performance reviews, and so forth. And it just sets a good foundation for the entire employee-employee relationship.
Yeah, I agree. What about, it's funny you bring up reviews. I think there's plenty of companies, lots of companies that don't even do reviews. Do you advise that as well? Listen, do the reviews, because then if you don't give somebody a raise or there's reasons for this or you want to elevate them, you have a record. That's got to be important, right?
Agreed. And, we think that not doing regular performance reviews is basically a setup for a wrongful termination suit down the road.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm stunned at some of the things that I've seen. I worked at a place that I won't name, but it's pretty big in the industry, where I came in and I was in an on-air management role, and the people that worked with me hadn't had raises in like 4 years, but all the people around them had, and I said, how come you haven't had a raise? Well, no one asked us. Oh. And then, of course, I'm like, are you kidding me? Nobody asked you. And these weren't shy women, which is not a gender thing, but they were all guys. I was in sports, and I was like, wow. It just showed the power that they perceived the organization to have. And then when I went to the main boss, the general manager, he said, absolutely, sure, bring it on. Tell me why they should have a raise. It didn't even blink. Like, well, nobody ever asked. We're not just going to pan it out like lollipops.
Isn't that interesting?
And it shows you why you should ask that. That's why I asked you the question about the job descriptions and whatever, because then when you come in, you already know what the game – I think you know what the game plan is and what your game
plan is.
It's fair on both sides.
You bring up a good point. May I digress back to the Facebook conversation?
Sure.
There's something very, very important that I hope doesn't escape the discussion about Facebook, because our conversation's been focused on that very recent case and the labor board's decision around that. But this is very important. Just like we were talking about divorces and so forth, all that stuff that people put on their social media pages is also being used now by employers when they're making hiring decisions. So even if the information that an individual puts out is not used against them by their current employer, if they have some bad stuff out there saying bad things about their current employer and they're out looking for a new job and they're being interviewed, there's a pretty good chance that in this day and age, the person doing the screening is out looking for information on those candidates on their own social media pages. And if there's bad stuff out there, it could have a very negative impact on a hiring decision for that person.
Sure, they might not even know what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't understand. You say, well, my resume was so good, I don't understand. Yeah.
I was in the running. I made the short list. What happened? You're not returning my phone calls. Well, what you say can and will be used against you. Maybe not today, but it will come back to haunt you tomorrow.
I agree. Perfect place to end this. Be careful out there, folks. Paul Bazell, HR consultant, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Kate.